All right, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Jeez. Anyway, that's me. Sorry, that's all we get. Same old kind of story, just this conversation about the fact that there is a certain reality that we're all existing in, and yes, mine is aesthetically different than yours, but, it's just you're sitting somewhere or standing somewhere or doing something somewhere, you're listening to a video out of some sort of curiosity, and this happens to be the one you're listening to now, with some hope of being entertained or some hope of being inspired or triggered in some way to have a thought that might be useful or pleasant. And that's the whole real argument, is the utility part of our brain and then the part that's doing this. How do I feel about that? The difficulty is we can't think independently of the feeling thing, and we feel, based on what our patterns of thinking are. And it's almost like your mood is being controlled not so much by, well, it is, by both things. It's, a combination of what do you feel like? Is everything settled and comfortable? Or do you have tension or nerves or some other thing? And, and then your thoughts will travel depending on how well you feel. And the worse you feel, the more negative your thoughts tend to get. Maybe that's not true for you. It's true for me. One bad thought just, cascades into a whole bunch of unpleasant, scenarios. It's like, I'd go to Africa or something and you get a headache and you say, oh, are there worms eating my brain? I'd start being paranoid, thinking the worst, just contemplating jeopardy and, being controlled by something, you could call it just fear in a way. But some of that is logical. I mean, it's just logical to recognize and be defensive and be careful and all of that stuff. So it's the difference between driving on bald tires, for example, without even knowing your tires are, the metal showing, and at any minute you could hit a rock just right and, the tire blows out. Being completely oblivious to it, not even thinking about it, and then spending the entire trip, paranoid, going 10 miles an hour because you're afraid your tire's going to blow up. It's hard to say that one way of thinking, negative or positive, casual and glib versus paranoid and fear controlled, however you want to describe those two, positions you could take, is superior. Just to, again, you can have an argument about, which one leads to more harm and which one gets more results and all that kind of crap. So obviously you have to argue that some people to achieve greatness had to be kind of oblivious to the opportunities for failure. They had to take chances, let's just say, or they, had to overcome odds. They had to beat the odds. And part of beating the odds sometimes is just not knowing there are odds and, not paying any attention because you just get in your way. If you think you can fail, then you might be more likely to fail. And if you think you can't fail, it makes the job that much easier. So even if you were like tightrope walking for the first time, but somebody gave you the delusion or the hypnotic suggestion that you were an expert, that you probably do better, all right, thinking you're in control than being paranoid about every single little nuance of the experience and obsessing about every sense of lack of control or fear of falling and all of that crap. So confidence is very useful. But I would argue that in the case of doing some things, it's very dangerous because it'll do exactly the opposite. It'll just set you up to guarantee failure because you won't have practiced first. You won't have understood how, you know, to do what you're obligated to do. Like, you can't just say, okay, I'm a professional juggler, and then start juggling. You can think you can, oh yeah, the concept is I throw it up in the air and then I catch it. Yeah, that's not so hard. But obviously it requires your brain to already have done a whole bunch of muscle memory. It's, you know, learned to make it reflexive. And you haven't learned any of those reflexes, so you can't just say, you know, hit the key over there on the piano. You know, you can't just say it. You have to have created the learned memory of how to do it. So you will fail because you didn't think it through and you didn't go through the process of, you know, having yourself understand the position you're in and understand what it is in this example I'm using, okay, which is, you know, taking life seriously, and that is in the sense of wanting to have a understanding of your existence that's true and honest, rather than one that's, you know, made out of fables and wishful thinking and such. Obviously, one is, it's easier not to have to think it through and to recognize liabilities and risks. That's, you know, to worry about it. It's easier not to worry. But I would argue that part of the worrying about it is where the truth comes and where your brain does this, its obligation to fulfill its mathematical responsibilities of going through the entire procedure step by step and accurately, you know, without any false statements in the math, you know, false axioms, false descriptions of equalities, you know, like truth equals God or something. Okay, you know, so if you have some garbage in, garbage out, you put some garbage into the model, then you run the model with the stupid garbage in it, the garbage gets on everything else and destroys your model of reality. The hopes and the wishful thinking and the it's hard to describe the, you know, people's optimism. It's hard for me to describe it because I'm kind of cynical about its substance. Like, it doesn't have any. It's just a knee-jerk addictive reaction. They have a positive experience with the heroin, therefore they enjoy heroin. You know, heroin's been very good to them once or something, and they keep chasing that very goodness, but it's not very good most of the time. I guess you could argue it's something like abusive parents, and you know, the child is still in the position where it needs those little moments where it gets confirmed and loved, and it's, you know, willing to accept a lot of bad moments where it's neglected and abused to get those little pieces that it needs. And that's sort of what people are doing, is accepting an awful lot of bad, you know, horrible, you know, terrible, awful experiences, okay, to get their, you know, those little bits of affirmation and moments in the sun, whatever, splendor in the grass, whatever, rays of pure light, you know, that verify their existence or make them feel somehow complete, you know, they're completed, you know, by the experience. And they're just chasing that and pretending that, you know, it's a fair price paid, and it's, you know, it's an outrageously way too expensive price paid when you just add up a little tiny bit of it and such. So that's sort of where I'm going. Let's see how if I can get anywhere near there. So I will pause and allow the thoughts to do what they're doing, and, you know, the little bits of information, and try to say it so you can understand what I'm saying, that kind of thing. All right, back. Yes, I've been gone longer than I should have been. So it just ended up distracting me instead of enhancing my clarity. But one of the subjects I wanted to get to, or stay connected to, the concept, is just the idea that all we are is a reflexive device, okay? And it's, you know, you can have all these body reflexes, you know, you hit a joint and it reacts, blah, blah, blah. You hit a little nerve impulse in a tooth or something. So you have all these little reflexes, and your brain is just a bunch of these reflexes. It's a bunch of triggers that need more than one trigger to go off for the picture to pop on the screen. You have to hit more than one button, and then that picture pops up. And if you hit this arrangement, then that picture pops up. And it's just a mechanical process of knee jerks. And so everything that's you, both in terms of your mood and your brain, your thoughts, is just a bunch of reflexes, a bunch of triggers, switches, switching. And that's it. Yeah, there's no switches that are switched by anything. You know, God doesn't switch a switch for you. A frog doesn't switch a switch. Well, maybe a picture of a frog does, or the image of a frog. But generally speaking, you know, it's this internal system. So part of that occurred to me the other day. I noticed again. I've been noticing it over the last decade. I didn't notice it years ago, so I don't know. Maybe it's a stroke thing. I'm not sure what it is. But some of the muscles in my leg, especially my calves, they're constantly, you know, doing this subtle thing. I don't really feel it, you know. So I tried to look at it happening and then say, can I feel it, that happening? And I couldn't really feel it. But they're just constantly doing this stuff. So I'm not walking, I'm not lifting, I'm not doing anything, I'm just sitting. And they're, you know, all angsty. You know what I'm saying? Well, yeah, I guess that's the nature of why I'm so uncomfortable here on Earth, is that I think there's a lot of stuff in me that's doing this constantly, being tense and, you know, uncomfortable, irritated, reflexes, always triggering, stuff triggers too much. You know, it's too fast, too much. And, but then I said to myself, well, yeah, I know, but this case is that it's benign because I don't recognize it consciously. But then the question is, well, you're certainly, your body's probably recognizing it subconsciously. There's no way it could miss it, kind of thing, right? Because if I poke on my skin just subtly, you know, and make it move, I'll feel that. So the fact is, it's ignoring what I'm, it's the twitching it's creating, it's ignoring because it knows it's always there. It's just background noise, and it's, you know, filtered it out of my experience. But it's still experiencing it, so to speak. It still has to have all the triggers lined up to even do the filtering. So it's all interesting. And it just gets back to this, you know, we're just biological machines. And we're doing this thing, you know, where I'm having this conversation with you, explaining my experience and hoping that there's some kind of connection between my experiences and your experiences and some way that I can possibly describe what seems obvious to me, which is that life is way too expensive, that the amount of right now, the amount of conscious organisms experiencing terror and horror and intense discomfort, pain, just awful experiences I wouldn't, even if I had to experience them once, I wouldn't want, I wouldn't accept the deal, they're so bad. That's the price for what we're doing, which is what? Seeking, just being hungry, finding food and eating it. Trying to find a few moments where we can have a little fantasy and imagine some scenario and say, have a good dream, I guess. It's even hard to describe what this good feeling thing is. I could argue in the past, a cup of coffee and a cigarette, on a pleasant evening or something, listening to the birds chirp or whatever. A moment of peace and tranquility. And like I said, some sort of happy thoughts. Maybe somebody gave you a lottery ticket. You're going, ooh, maybe I'm going to win. Maybe there's some little good thing that's supposed to happen. You have some anticipation. And so you have some pleasant chain of reasoning and thoughts in your head. Just opposed to that, is like, my current circumstance of being retirement age, and it gets scary and scarier. You're just waiting for it to break down. You see the rust, so there's a real indication that the machine is not what it used to be. And you're just sitting here kind of waiting for when the parts are really going to start flying off. And, there's nothing, you can't just have your cigarette and your cup of coffee with that chirp, right? That the chirps in your brain of these negative thoughts are not pleasant. And, you don't have some sort of fresh air feeling. It's more like a stagnant swamp, and you just hear the mosquitoes buzzing, and you're itching all over, even though you haven't been bitten yet, because you know what's coming, and it's no good. So I just, the conversation's always just going to be about, this is such a weird circumstance we're in. Here sitting in this mechanical, physical universe full of, just pieces of clumps of stuff. The collections of clumps, like the moon is a clump. It's got hard parts and a bunch of dust on it from all the pulverization that took place when things smashed into it. And, it's like the ocean and the beach, the sand is all just a bunch of big rocks that have been worn down to little tiny rocks. This is the universe. It's just a bunch of big stuff and little stuff moving around, banging in. Out of that arises, this idea that you can have these different chemical compounds and that these different pieces of chemistry can, in the right circumstances, build this. Okay. And again, this is built out of a bunch of living things being enslaved to function for the purpose of this machine. I'm made of living devices. Then some living alien devices are actually living inside of me, pretending to be part of me. Even some of them doing essential functions. Not part of me. They're still, they're not, my genetics didn't make them and my cells didn't make them. They are invaders, and parasites. And, just a very weird circumstance. And then out of all that comes this idea of making these, for the DNA agenda, the gladiator war, the idea of, the machine has to be able to function, has to have tools, it has to have claws and teeth and eyesight and hearing and, there's different sense organs. Like a battleship has to have radar, and then it has to have torpedoes, and it has to have whatever fake torpedoes to dummy things. It has to have all kinds of defensive and aggressive, offensive weapons. And the brain, this thinking device, was created for that purpose, to be a scheming tool, and that's all it exists for in all the other organisms on the planet. It just exists to do battleship duty. And the fact is the battleship now has this computer that doesn't just have to compute how far away is the enemy, can I eat it, can I fuck it. It can do something much more elaborate with its computing hardware, and it can actually contemplate the meaning of its existence and, why does it have the job of being a battleship? What battle? What's the war about? It can ask the much bigger questions, not just calculate its next move. And that's the difference between, a human who's still an animal, that is living, just chasing their desire, having some meager functionality in terms of they're doing a little bit of scheming, calculating, but they don't even do that very well. They eat too much, they drink too much, they sit and watch TV too much. And they don't really learn about the bigger question of what are we fighting for? What is the war about? Why do I need to do this and that? And, none of the bigger questions arises in their computing. So they're living a smaller life as just a creature, doing the full human treatment of being a philosopher or whatever you want to call it, a seeker of the truth, somebody who wants to see a model of their existence and wants to see them in the model. They want to see a map of the county, and they want to see where their house is. They want to see where all the other features are related to that, and how, whether the flood's going to come this way or that way, or is the weather moved north to east or east to west, and which way does it go? And they want to know what it is to be here and what it is happening to them and what they can expect. They're going to ask these questions. Can I really live with the fact that everything I build, will be garbage someday to somebody else, right? Somebody else will show up and say, this is all garbage. All the stuff that meant something to me, this maybe this lion, Ethel, who knows, just be ended up on the street, it's garbage. all the parts of your existence, it all turns to nothing. I plant a garden every year, and it's all turns to shit, literally, right? You just turn it into shit, and then you do it all over again, and turn it into shit, and then do it all over again, turn it into shit. Just thinking about those parts of our existence, some of the biological functions are just so shitty. Okay. It's like, God damn, if you were to reinvent the world, it would be such a different world, if you could really control it. And people should be honest about that. I mean, certainly there'd be no such thing as a mosquito bite. Okay, there just wouldn't be something if I was inventing the world, these would be so easy to extract certain things out of it that are just such a fun ruiner, get in the way of any kind of deriving any kind of comfort or enjoyment. They're just such party pooping elements of existence, and certainly choking death. Crushed in earthquakes, all that kind of stuff. None of those experiences would be realistic. know, we wouldn't be able to be cracked and broken in little pieces. You either break it or you don't break it. You either kill it or it stays intact. But it's like, you know, I wouldn't make a system where you could just, you know, rip the pieces off of it slowly. You know, just pluck all its leaves off and it just struggles to exist and just perpetually in some sort of, you know, form of incomplete and disabled and crippled and deprivated and all those kind of, and so I guess I could sort of analogize again my own life to that kind of circumstance, although I didn't have some obvious blight like colitis or some disease or some, you know, I didn't have any hard physical one that you could diagnose. You know, it was more subtle, you know, just a nervous condition, you know, that kind of thing. You know, but it was enough to, you know, rain on the parade a lot. So the simple argument is that yes, if you live in a place with a lot of mosquitoes, you're going to have an appreciation for how it's just not quite as charming as the people in the mosquito-free environment think it is. I mean, it's sort of so trivial that I shouldn't use it as an argument, but I just did. So I'm not going to retract it, but I'll just qualify it by saying you have to magnify that rather extensively. But it's just a simple argument that, look, the people who are arguing pro-life, generally speaking, are people who have been just lucky to evade the hard parts of reality. And or you'd say they were just so glib and cruel, so insensitive, that it doesn't matter. I mean, I suppose there was people in the war who could watch their friends get killed, get their heads, faces blowed off. They could see the victims. They might be able to go to one of the camps and, you know, see the graves anyway, the mass graves, and, you know, maybe see some of the surviving victims. And, yeah, no big deal. You know, you get over it in a couple of months, I'm fine. You know, it's, you know, where somebody else would say, I just don't know how I could ever, how can I defend it, that price being paid, and our existence is so, you know, it's like the movie Saving Private Ryan, which, like most Tom Hanks movies, it's hard to like because he's so annoying. But anyway, it's just, you know, this kind of silly story where, you know, yeah, you kill 25 people to save one person. And then the one person is somehow, you know, the question is, did he really do anything with that life to justify the 25 lives it cost? And yeah, the simple answer is probably not. Okay. You know, he probably didn't save the lives of 25 people. And he probably didn't do much to make the price worth paying. I mean, just remembering the dead would be a hard enough burden for his own existence. Would just be having to spend so much time actually remembering the people who did sacrifice so much for him. And all of those dark thoughts would also just mean that he couldn't live the happy life that they were trying to earn him, you know, the good life. And so he's just a slave to the price paid for his life. And he ends up an alcoholic or whatever. So really the subject is trying to explain to people that, you know, look, this pro-life thing is just really just, you really have to be almost, you have to be cruel to think there's some justification you can make to impose all of this hard, nasty experience. And then for what, you know, some, I don't know, silly little narrative in your head about, I don't know, stroking some magical, you know, thing, you know, you'll stroke the magical thing and you'll have your little experience. Is that, you know, what, I mean, realistically, what's going to happen? You're just going to live your cruddy little life and pretending that your cruddy little life is so great that it was worth killing something for, or harming something, or torturing something. I don't know. How do you make sense out of it? So if tomorrow that was the proposition, you know, that we're gonna throw darts at kittens, you know. We're gonna throw darts at kittens. Okay, we're gonna kill 10 kittens by throwing darts at them, you know, and just slowly killing them. That's the price for another week of your life. Would you sign the contract? Say, sure, I'll take that. Yeah, go ahead. Start throwing your darts. Would you throw be the actual one to throw the darts? I mean, can you really think of yourself to say, yeah, I'm willing to do it? Now, I'm arguing that obviously procreators, a tiny bit of thinking, it's got to make you be a little afraid of the outcomes, because you see what happens. You see what comes out of other people's vaginas, and sometimes it's a monstrosity, and that's got to scare the shit out of you. I mean, I don't know how you go into it without some great deal of fear, unless you're just so fucking stupid. So if you're that fucking stupid, you're probably not watching this video. So I probably can't talk to you because you're not watching the video. Because you have to be so averse to any kind of serious conversation about anything real. And because it's the only way you could maintain your delusion that, you know, what you're involved in is some sort of cartoon, you know, and there's nobody really falls off a cliff, you know, nobody actually gets shot with the gun, you know, it just makes your beak spin around, you get shot, you know, and your beak spins around, you know, it's not real, you know, it's a video game, you just hit the redo button, you just go back to your previous saved game and start over. No harm, no foul. And that's not reality. And it's sad that people need that explained to them, that that's not reality. Reality isn't a free video gamey thingy. It isn't just pull as much fun as you want out of it, and the worst it can do is be a little tedious, because you'll have to go back to the setup program and hit 4 buttons. Ooh, wow, gee, that's just too horrible. You know, while things are right now, you know, experiencing choking death. Yeah. Glib. That's all you can write. It's just way too... people are just so stupid and ignorant and insensitive. All right, so a bunch of thoughts popped into my head, and that's the whole point, really, is to have a whole bunch of thoughts pop into my head, and then I try to see if I can connect the dots between the thoughts and try to get them to connect inside your head. All right, so the real argument is that we're just, this is like, you know, you have people who, like the vertigo argument I've made before, but you could have seasickness, or you could have people who, some people faint at the sight of blood. And then, you know, other people, it's the smell, you know, then they could, you know, that starts making them woozy. You know, a little different trigger. So it's the same experience, same thing happening, but we're all triggered a little different because of our life experience and our genetic code. This is your disposition, is these certain reflexes will trigger and you will have a physiological reaction. Your body will react, and some of the reactions are perfectly sensible, and that is there. You can feel it, and then you just think it, and you see that consciously happening, and others are just physical reactions, like passing out or nausea or some kind of thing where you didn't get to consciously cause it, you know, in the sense that you don't get to see the pathways at all. They're just all hidden subtle subconscious triggers. And so having a conversation between people, trying to explain that, you know, okay, this is how you're triggered. Well, I'm triggered 2 and 3, you know, where you're 4 and 1, and, you know, there's 10 different things, and we're just arranged different. The triggers are arranged different. And in a lot of these cases, there isn't some argument to be made that some triggered sense is better than some other triggered sense. So I've made the argument that it doesn't matter whether you like soccer or you like football or you like baseball or you like golf or you like tennis or you like watching a soap opera. It's all the same thing. The fact that you're triggered by a different kind of uniform or, because it's one you've been used to. You grew up with that uniform, and that's what a baseball player wears, and blah, 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 and that's part of how the game is played. And so the same thing is true with the reaction to people bleeding. If you've seen a lot of it and you've practiced being around it, well, no big deal. I couldn't, like, dress a deer, let's say. You know, that's what they call it, I think. You know, cut it up. I'd be uncomfortable because I did a tiny bit of dissection of, like a possum of some sort, I think in high school, but it was only like 10 minutes. Okay. played with a couple of little gooey bits and that was it. So you didn't have to actually, you know, do the cutting it up kind of part. But yeah, I can imagine, you know, there would be a smell and there'd be a this and the whole thing would be, you know, but gutting a fish, I did that all the time as a kid. So that would be a nothing experience. Can't say it'd be nothing because I haven't done it in so long. It's kind of I'm sure just in the last 30 years, I did it so infrequently that the few times I did think about it. I did find it, let's just say awkward. I didn't find it uncomfortable. Just, it made you think. And I was more appreciative of just recognizing that another reflexive organism is in a state where I can be playing with its guts. And, it's kind of such a personal indignity, you know, as much as that doesn't matter, it matters to us. Those are reflexes we have, and there's something grossly undignified by having your guts outside of your body. And so you feel a certain humiliation kind of thing, an awkwardness about taking that from some other organism, taking its dignity. So those are a bunch of triggers, you know, even the word dignity, it's a trigger word. Okay. Some people don't know what it, you know, it doesn't mean anything to them. It's just some sort of, what's that? You know, what's up with that word? What do you mean? What's a dignity? And other people, it's going to mean, you know, it's tied to a whole bunch of honor and integrity and, dying with your boots on kind of thing. Not being desecrated. Not spitting on the painting kind of thing, not smearing mud on it, all that kind of stuff, drawing on it, Hitler, swastikas and shit, doing some kind of thing like that. So that's the trick of the conversation, is that we all have these different reflexes to imagining a circumstance and imagining how you would react in the circumstance and what it would do to you psychologically to experience the circumstance. So there's people who can be nurses, and doctors and medics and all those kind of things. And, because it doesn't make them think too much, people in crisis is just a problem to be solved. It doesn't have any, it doesn't trigger them in some sort of psychological way where they connect it and then say, project themselves in the same circumstance and start obsessing about how unacceptable what they're watching taking place is. They don't even question it. They don't do any philosophy. They just deal with it as what the biological reflexes are, and there's very few of those because they've been there and done this. So it's like I could make a hole in the ground, right, that goes 5 miles down, and then you have to step over the hole, right? And so there's a distance. I make that hole where you're going to feel awkward, you know, about, whoa, that's like a jump. You know, and I have to leap across the hole, and then you have to, wow, which foot should I lead with? And, you know, it starts to become a question, you know, about how comfortable you've been. But now if you've done it 100 times, right, you've gotten used to it. Like first you have a board over the hole, and so you can just step on the board and walk across, and you start getting more and more used to it, and eventually you can, you know, it's like the hole doesn't matter anymore because you've jumped over it so many times successfully. And so you know how to do that. So your brain has created reflexes that enable you to, you know, jump over the hole, not pay any attention, not worry, not even think about it. Just do the reflexive muscle memory thing, jump over the hole. So that made me think of, you know, I thought first of a roof analogy where there was a roof I had to, you know, it was a flat roof and it chronically leaked. So I was up there a lot. And you had to get to it, it was tricky. So you could put the ladder on the short distance and climb up on the roof, and then you could jump to the flat roof, which was a long distance up on a long, you know, tall ladder, and there was a bunch of trees in the way. So it was really awkward to go directly onto the flat roof, but it wasn't so awkward to go up a short ladder, get on the roof, and get onto the... But you had to jump, you know, from the sloped roof onto the flat roof, you know. And there's this place where, yeah, you go straight down. So you have to jump over the place you go straight down. You know, so at first I had put a board there, and, you know, so I had some kind of something to walk across so it was more stable and more reliable that I'd get across. But I just found over time it was just easier to make the one big step, you know, not the two step, just one big step, and you always made it. And so when I got used to it, you know, it wasn't a big deal. But if you force somebody who hasn't used to it to do it, it's going to be a big deal. All right, so all of this is just about, you know, the fact that our psychology really does get in the way of having a conversation, because we all become, you know, we can all have different sensitivities to some kind of just a simple example. So the simple example is, again, we know what life costs, in the sense that we know we can say what it costs to human beings, and we know statistically there's some fact. There's a certain amount of misery and suffering happening every 60 seconds, okay? And then there's a certain amount of whatever the good stuff is, you know, the pleasant thoughts and feelings happening. And the one is paid for by the other. That's the simple math. And your job, okay, is to logically examine that and say, is there something in the happy stuff that's worth paying that price for? You're not pulling people out of prison, okay? You're just saying, I'm going to take something that's going to feel nothing, and I'm going to get it feel this comfortable thing. Or and the fact is you don't need to do it. I mean, there's no necessity that something feels good or gets out of, there's no prison. You're not undoing a negative. You're just somehow creating some sort of extra, okay, positive thing, you know, that can't really be described, frankly, as anything other than a fixing of something that's broken in you. You know, feeling good is just not feeling bad. That's the truth of it. It's the default, and the bad just gets in the way a lot, and so we don't notice that the default is feeling good, because we're constantly harassed by, you know, the negative tensions and aggravations and irritations. I mean, it brings up allergies. I mean, I never had allergies, but I do now. And hard to say what exactly, but yeah, I can feel it in my eyes. My eyes are just, it's like my eyes are made out of some kind of gluey lead. it's not a big, it's not like a terrible pain. But you realize through your whole day that it's creating this tension, constant tension, that's just there all the time. And I just become acclimated to it until I recognize it and say, this is a negative state. It just literally is negative. I've just accepted it as part of the base condition. And, my brain, I guess, is in a part, negating its existence to some extent. But when I really get relief from it, you can just feel the difference. It's just so, whoa, my eyes actually do open all the way. I guess it's another, just these little things. My forehead's always been very creased because I've done this a lot and my whole life has been, the tension has always been there. And it's furrowed, my head. Anyway, so besides the point. So it's just a simple, like I said, if we could just separate ourselves from our attachments to the narrative, the idea of a narrative, the idea of humans being here. How can humans not be here? I'm so used to baseball. I'm so used to, the end of Yankee Stadium. What do you mean? I mean, I couldn't really believe that they actually tore down Yankee Stadium and people didn't pay much attention. Especially changing the location because it was right on the river, and it's just such a, to move it, even though you only moved it 500 yards or something, it's still not the same. Anyway, just a little thing. Because people get attached to things and, they have to have things the way they are and they have to be the same and they have to blah, 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 and they have to, fit into their model of how the world works. And the simple truth is that your model is just it's just in your way. It's creating a false notion of accomplishment and a false notion of a value or accomplishment, I guess is the right word. That you've done something to justify throwing the darts at the kittens. And you haven't done anything to justify just one of the kittens being darted to death. And that's the truth. And your life has cost a lot more than 10 kittens. It's really expensive to be a human being having a pleasant evening. It's just not cheap enough. It's way, it's trillions of dollars of expense that doesn't come out of your pocket. So you pretend it doesn't cost anything because somebody else has to pay for it. So yeah, I guess you could compare it to some sort of welfare life that people, they're on welfare, and they just don't have any appreciation for the fact that somebody had to go to work, 8 hours a day to feed their kids, or to take care of, fixing their house or doing whatever the charity or the welfare is doing. Somebody else had to be inconvenienced for it, and there's just no appreciation for that. And so you could argue that most people, the pro-lifers, are just welfare whores. we think other people paying for it is acceptable, and we don't kind of totally ignore the price they're paying, because the price is, it's not just a 50 cents. it's a real it's years of hard labor in the slave camp, in the gulag, you know, for every comfortable moment you exist. Way too expensive. I mean, that's just not a, I don't think there's any kind of argument that can be made to counter the too expensive argument. Because again, you can just analogize it to, if you had to actually inject a kid with cancer to keep yourself alive, would you do it? And that's literally what you're doing. You're allowing people to be born into circumstances that won't work, the reflexes won't match, the circumstances won't match their reflexes, and the outcome is going to be bad. It's going to be a lot of misery and emotional trauma and physical trauma and deprivation and horror and doom. And that's a fact. And that's, you're saying, okay, go ahead, impose it to preserve Yankee Stadium. Yeah, to preserve nothing. You know, silly human tricks. There's nothing to describe, a ballet or something. We should torture a million cats for a ballet. No, you shouldn't. Too stupid. Undefendable, really. All right, so final thoughts were ugly. So without the pretty colors, right? Wow. You know, what an ugly lizard frog thing. I mean, its hands are all fucked up. You know, it's got like a big giant thumb and a little tiny finger. I don't know. Anyway. The subject, I was thinking about, your people are basically saying, I am worth it. You know, that's the counter argument, is I am worth it. And, you know, and it's just, it's so delusional in the sense that, do they really think so? I mean, you know, and it's coming from people like, you know, I was thinking sort of like of actors, and, you know, they don't truly have too many that are really ugly people, okay? But every now and then there's an actor who's just quite homely, and he just plays the quite homely loser, whatever. Some person who's, you know, got a lot of, short and bald and fat and, you know, all the lots of negatives, you know, and not much going for it, not going to be the leading man, not, you know, they're just there to show some sense of reality, just some sort of defect, just so it doesn't look like the movie's been sanitized too much. But they didn't do that too much with child actors, right? And you could sort of think about it, like, you know, if they did take some, you know, homely girl and throw her into a sitcom or something, that it would be kind of cruel, right? You know, I mean, a truly homely girl, you know. Like even Roseanne, they pretended they made the younger sister oddballish, but she wasn't homely. So they always made the defect something a little less dramatic, in terms of, something that would make you feel bad, okay, and sad and uncomfortable. And that's what people do. They just sanitize the reality and try to make it, fade into being acceptable by just making it into just turn the blood into food coloring. Water with food coloring in it, no big deal. They have some mechanism to relieve them of the accepting it for the reality. I guess, you know, it's like even the microbe thing is sort of like that, right? There's microbes living in all, like, eyelashes. It's everywhere. There's all these little bugs. And, some people find that very creepy, to be infected by all these little parasitic monsters, these little organisms eating you and shitting on you constantly. But it's so non-visible, right? It's not like crabs or something. It's not, it's not like it leaves an impression that's more obvious. And so people can make it go away and just pretend it doesn't exist, because it's not in their face. It can be cartooned, drawn, and it can be remodeled into pretty colors. I mean, you could just look at that painting there and you could just say, look at the pretty colors. The interesting little bits of contrast, the, pastels versus this. You could light and dark it. You could say, well, this looks like a woman's behind there, and this looks like and you could turn it into something that's, obviously very different than what the actual painting is, because you're just looking at the colors and not the characterization, the actual what's in the painting, the substance of it. So, I think that's, enough to be said that if you look at reality, it's not going to have these pretty colors in it. It's going to be a tiny little section of reality is the pretty colors. And the rest of it is a long, hard, difficult, struggling, eking, painful, uncomfortable, tense, difficult, Sisyphus struggle. And it's for naught. It's, it's lifting snowballs to the top of the volcano. It's just not going to work. It's just a waste of time. A waste of snow. And if the snow was kittens being crushed, you'd have some more appreciation for just how pointlessly expensive it is and how horrible it is to be a defender of the concentration camps, the gulag, the slavery to some notion that humans need to keep imposing this price for these silly little thoughts that pop into a head based on a bunch of reflexive noise, that we've gotten used to. We're calling it music, but, it's only music because we recognize the tune. It's not music in and of itself. It's trained. You can see that with different cultures, right? I mean, when I first heard like Asian music, it was like, what the fuck, that's music? And now, you listen to modern, rap or some other crap, and it's like, how the fuck do people play that on purpose? I mean, you might as well just play it. This is the annoying song, the annoying song, the annoying song. This is the, you want to just annoy the fuck out of me? Yeah, turn that machine on. I'd rather listen to a fucking lawnmower. It has a more consistent beat, a more rational theme, than slut, whore, whore, slut, whore, whore, slut, nigga, whore, slut. No, I don't get that. Fuck. Anyway. Money. Slut, whore, slut, money. Fuck. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I might as well talk to the frog, right? I mean, so why might as well listen to what the frog has to say? I know it's not a frog. I'm just saying, big mouth, it's just a frog that doesn't know it's a frog. It's a frog pretending, okay? It wants to be something more, so it's pretending to be something more. It just has a long tongue like a frog, too, so it is kind of a froggy lizard. All right, anyway, enough. Yeah, that's really enough, right? Yeah, it's like that pathway to that chameleon has to be quite different than its pathway of normal lizards, right? Because normal lizards and snakes don't do the shoot out your tongue thing. So there must be a more direct relationship between chameleons and frogs than there is between frogs and, I don't know, monitor lizards. But anyway, that's an evolution question. It's a detail, probably important to someone. Yeah, that's the other part, right, is figuring out what the important facts are, the ones that we need to know, and the ones that, how far a branch, the frog branch is from the chameleon branch isn't probably that important a piece of information. But sometimes it's hard to have the conversation because people think that's an important one. People who do think that's important, you have to talk their language. So it's like people who play chess, you sort of have to try to, bend the conversation into chess speak, and then talk about some other subject through chess perspective. And that's part of the difficulty of having the conversation, is everybody has a different way of viewing the world from their, I'm a piano player, or I'm a violin player, or I'm a chess player, or I'm a soccer fan, and those eyes create a very different view of the world. And that is a problem. Yeah, because, it's very hard to write one sentence that works for a chess perspective and a football perspective. Anyway, that's enough of a video and such. So, till the next time. Hopefully I'll do some more. Well, there's no point in me saying. See, the weather's nicer. I've been doing a lot of outside work, a lot of that kind of stuff. So I really haven't devoted much time to all of this internet crap. But anyway, I'll try to devote more time. I am always thinking, but see, it's always been a thing. Because you're saying, gee, why don't you just take a tape recorder with you? Now you can. It's so easy. But it's never that simple, because as you think something, you're thinking at a certain rate. And then as soon as you go to say it, the thinking breaks down. And then you have to reconstruct the thinking process to say the next sentence. And so it kind of just breaks all the continuity of your thought process. So it's kind of like capturing a dream, when you wake up. There's parts of it that are almost, they're just fading so quickly. And you're just like, oh, I want to remember that key thing. Oh, that key. Oh, that was the key thing. That was the other key. And it's all just, it's fading so fast. And the time it takes you to write one observation about the dream, in that time you've lost the other half of the dream, is gone now. So in the time it takes to say it or write it, you've already lost the substance of the concept, which is really annoying. I know, just another fact of life that just kind of sucks, that's the way brains work. They can't compose the painting and paint the painting at the same time. You know what I mean? You can't think about what you're painting and paint it. It just doesn't work that way. You have to pre-think it and then do what you pre-thought and then think the next step. Irritating. Anyway, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Point is you can see the whole thing inside your brain, but you can't explain the whole thing, in that one piece. You have to explain, it's a maze, it's a square, the lines are, a half inch thick, and, you have to go through this crap of explaining the detail of the maze rather than just explain the function of the maze. All right, anyway. But that's enough, I think. Oh, till the next time, such and so forth, and whatnot.